is Radio Boston. I'm Callum Borchers. And we begin today with a drastic call to action in the Catholic Church from one of its own, author and former priest James Carroll. Carroll has a new article that appears in the June edition of The Atlantic. It's headlined, "To Save the Church, Dismantle the Priesthood." And James Carroll joins me now in studio. Jim, welcome back to Radio Boston.
Thank you, Callum. Great to be back.
Let's just begin with that headline. It is really dramatic, as I said, to save the church, dismantle the priesthood. How did you arrive at that conclusion?
Well, it took me 20 years. It's almost 20 years since the Boston Globe Spotlight series began to run. 2002, was it? 10 years before that, the scandal began to brew in Boston with the revelations of an abusive priest named James Porter, which coincided, as it so happened, with my beginning as a columnist for the Globe, and I wrote about Porter. So that's almost 30 years, or more than 25. For many, many years, I thought that this problem, the scandal laid bare by the abusive priests and the almost universal response of bishops to protect them instead of children, I thought it was an aberration, that the answer to it was to make certain reforms in the reporting procedures, for example, certain reforms in the way the church handled these accusations. But two things began to happen. One was, no matter how awful the revelations, as nation after nation after nation, wherever there were priests in the world, there were children being abused, priests being accused, and bishops protecting the priests instead of the children. This response became so consistent year in and year out that one began to realize there's something deeper going on here than simple abuse of minors and an institution that can't quite cope with it. There's some revelation of a basic dysfunction in the imagination of the church. And I came to the conclusion that that's centrally the problem and that it's embedded in the priesthood itself. Two things. It's all male character, which is an institutionalization of male supremacy, profoundly unjust rejection of the equality of women, a problem that looks different now than it did 20 years ago because the feminist revolution has matured to yet another important phase. And the second, the mandated requirement that all priests be celibate, which again isn't itself the issue, but it is a signal of a deeper disorder about the church's attitude towards sexuality generally. So what I'm really getting to is the deeper sources of the surface malfunction.
But couldn't you just – I mean, you've laid out – and I realize it's more complicated, but you've laid out two chief reforms. I mean, couldn't you just change those things, you know, allow women to become priests, allow priests to marry, as opposed to just tossing out the whole clerical structure?
Well, the question is, yes, that if that had been done 20 years ago, I'm quite sure the priesthood itself, but the church itself, would have evolved in ways that would have addressed this deeper dysfunction, which has to do with male supremacy and distrust of bodily experience, especially sexuality. So ordaining married people and ordaining women, admitting women to full equality in the church, would have had that kind of effect, I predict. I think it still would be – those are still ways to move forward. But the question became at a certain point, why isn't this happening? And then in 2013, Pope Francis is elected to the papacy, and it's universally understood that his major responsibility is to help the church begin a new day in relationship to the sex abuse scandal. And it seemed pretty obvious that the all-male, all-celibate character of the clergy was a place to begin. It turns out he's firmly defending both mandatory celibacy and an all-male priesthood. That's a revelation. Whoa, someone as revolutionary, as committed to change and as open-minded as Francis is not seeing the deeper disorder here. What is that telling us? Soon enough, it becomes pretty clear that there's a disorder in the institution itself. The priesthood is made up of countless men who are virtuous, generous, at the service of everyone in their lives. But the institution itself, the culture of the priesthood, is itself now deeply complicit in a pyramid of power that is showing itself to be incapable of reform. And that's the sad conclusion I've come to. And that's why I'm arguing that the deep dismantling of this structure of power is what's required. And the simple shorthand for where that begins is with the priesthood itself.
So you've been building toward this conclusion for a couple of decades now, at least, as you say.
Well, I didn't know it.
Yeah.
I didn't know it.
And you write, too, that it's sort of odd in a way that Pope Francis has played a role in triggering this, because you, like a lot of Catholics, I think, have placed a lot of hope in him as kind of a reforming figure. And I'm hoping that you can read a little bit from your Atlantic piece for us. This is a sort of particular line of questioning of Pope Francis in recent years that apparently really struck a chord with you. This is when he's been asked about the so-called Magdalene laundries in Ireland, right? These sort of homes for unwed mothers who we've learned through reporting over the years some cases were forced to live out their lives in servitude. They were abused and mistreated. And that when the Pope was asked about that scandal, he said he'd never even heard about these Magdalene laundries.
Yes. I don't have it in front of me, but let me just take a...
I can take it up for you, sir. There we go. We have it right in front of you, Jim. Sorry.
Sorry. Sorry. Well, the Pope said on the airplane going home from Ireland, and remember, Ireland is ground zero of this scandal.
Sure.
There are 18,000 identified victims of priests in Ireland, which means there are many more than that. Every person in Ireland is intimately related to a victim of a priest, which is why the Catholic Church has collapsed in Ireland. And the Magdalene laundries were a further instance of loss of faith in the Church. When the Pope was asked about his attitude toward them, he said he never heard of these mothers. He said they call them something like the laundromat of women. I never heard of these mothers. And that was the kind of tipping point for me, because at first I thought he's lying, which is a horrible thing to feel. But then I thought, well, maybe he's not lying. Maybe he's just ignorant. But to be ignorant of the Magdalene laundries, about which there have been reams written, plays produced, movies made, including Philomena starring Judi Dench, a kind of international scandal, hundreds of babies buried in sewage pits in the backyard of a convent, for goodness sake, laid bare by a government investigation, not by a church investigation. A kind of epitome of the moral degradation of the Catholic imagination. And when I read that the Pope claimed never to have heard of it, it just struck me as such an egregious instance of deflection and denial that I realized, of course, that characterizes the authorities, the Catholic authorities' overwhelming response to this whole problem, deflection and denial, and that's characterized even Francis, in whom we had placed such hope.
I think what stood out to me in that passage and why I wanted you to read it is, Picardless, you sort of pivot between, well, is it a lie or is it not a lie? But then you sort of hint at this idea that maybe it doesn't even really matter, that even if the Pope wasn't aware, he should have been, and that's just as bad,
right? It suggests such a level of detachment from the on-the-ground experience of the Catholic Church in Ireland. This is the Pope. It's not like he's the Archbishop of Chicago. Maybe the Archbishop of Chicago could be ignorant of such a scandal, but not the Pope. So either way, it was, as I write, a wire snapped in me, and I stopped being able to go on with my life as usual as a Catholic. And that's what I've come to. Business as usual for the Catholic Church is no longer acceptable.
Well, and that includes, you write, going to Mass,
right.
Even as a layperson. Can you tell me a little bit about that? I mean, that's a radical change in lifestyle for you, I take it.
It's true. As I describe it in this piece, I feel like I'm in a state of fast and abstinence. It's an old Catholic tradition, fasting from food and drink and abstaining from meat. Penitential observances usually associated with Lent. But I've been in fast and abstinence from the Mass itself, from the Eucharist. I've been fortunate in the Catholic communities I've been a part of. The priests I know are men of profound integrity. I regret that what I'm writing is probably wounding to them, but I could no longer go on with the institution itself. I'm calling for such a change in the institution. I'm not leaving it. I'm not renouncing my faith. I'm not walking away from the church. I'm a self-described internal exile in the church now. I understand that I'm actually not alone in this. There are many, many, many Catholics who feel this way, who even act this way. We're simply refusing to treat this as business as usual, which is how the bishops want it to be treated. And we saw that in the document that was released in Rome, I believe week before last, the kind of definitive statement by the Church of Pope Francis about this scandal, which basically is more of the same, business as usual, bishops supervising bishops, no mandated penalties for abusers or for those who cover up abuse.
Do you think there should be mandatory reporting to civil authorities?
Absolutely. This document from the Vatican 2 weeks ago requires reports of accused abusers to be forwarded to church authorities, but not to civil authorities. That's a tip-off. That's the church still trying to keep this within the precinct of clerical control. There are many places where priests and clergy are required by law to report, and this document won't prevent that. In fact, it encourages that. But the church itself should be requiring that. The church should be involving lay people in this process. The church should be mandating the removal from ministry permanently of anyone convicted of abusing a minor. None of that is happening. This is more of the same. It's an appalling conclusion of Francis's own grave responsibility to lead us to a new chapter, and it hasn't happened.
So just from a practical standpoint, I mean, if what you're calling for were to ever come true, an abolishment of the priesthood, what then would the church look like?
Well, the church will still organize itself around the memory of Jesus Christ, which is, of course, always tied up with the reading of the Gospels, the reading of the Scriptures, the explicit call to discipleship, to following Jesus, acts of the corporal works of mercy, devotion to justice and peace. All of that around gatherings centered on the meal, the bread and the wine, the Mass, the Eucharist, that will continue.
So who would lead it?
What I'm arguing now is it's time for a new phase in church life. In the beginning, the church was organized around such meals not by ordained clergy, but by the people who gathered in their homes. Hmm. The orders of the church that we see now are not 2,000 years old. Essentially, they're 1,000, 1,800 years old at the most. But the order of the priesthood as we know it is about a millennium old. All I'm really saying is the church has to do now what it has done in the past. In the past, it modeled itself around the Roman Empire. The archdiocese was originally a Roman government structure. The basilica was the palace of the emperor. The church organized itself around the traditions of the Roman Empire. Then it organized itself around the traditions of the monarchy in the Middle Ages. Now it's time for the church to do a version of the same thing. I'm calling for a conservative response, really, and the church could organize itself around the ethos of our era, which is liberal democracy, equality for everybody, and the tip-off is where are women in this, accountability, transparency, and the absolute commitment to the observance of law and the protection of the innocent. These are structures of the church that I'm sure will come into being. Think 100 years from now. 100 years from now, the church will look very different from what it looks like now. And what I'm asking is for people, Catholics, who are appalled by what the authorities in the church have been doing, not to give up on the church, but to work for that new vision, for that new era. How we get there, it's not clear. We won't really know clearly until we're looking back at how things developed and unfolded. But It's urgent. We have the great advantage of organizing ourselves forever around the memory of Jesus Christ. We can't let go of it. We want to be worthy of it. And that's been the heart and soul of the church from the beginning, and that's going to be the heart and soul of it going forward.
That's James Carroll. He's a former priest, the author of 20 books, and his new article is To Save the Church, Dismantle the Priesthood. It appears in the June issue of The Atlantic. Jim, thanks so much for joining us.
My privilege. Thank you.
Stay with us. Coming up, Mayor Marty Walsh joins us to take your calls and to introduce Boston's new school superintendent, Brenda Caselius. I'm Callum Borchers. This is Radio Boston.